Bridge Doctors, April 13th, 2006, with your hosts, Jason Odell
and Rick Walker.
Welcome to another exciting podcast on Nikonians Talk Radio.
Boy, that was inspirational music.
Wasn't it, though?
That was cool.
We're going to have too much fun today, folks. We're in a really good mood because we just got back from a photo shoot. There ain't nothing better than that, in my opinion.
There isn't.
But before we get into that, I thought we would bring up some stuff. This is the Image Doctors on Nikonians Talk Radio, www.nikonians.org. And today we want to talk about a few things, and we'll start with, as always, some listener mail. And our first and our email from today comes from Daniel Beatty.
Yep.
And Daniel wanted to know about changing over to digital photography. He just got a D200, an 18 to 200 millimeter VR lens. Good for you. Excellent choice. And he wanted some help with the advanced controls of his camera, learning about histogram, where to find courses or workshops that he could improve his digital photography skills.
Right. And that's a very common question. Certainly, one of the first things you want to do is check out the appropriate form that we have on our website, you know, the D200 form. You'll find lots of things there. Interestingly, if you have a specific topic like how to use the histogram, you also might check some of our other forms as well. But also check out our resources section. You'll find articles there that cover many of the common features on digital cameras, including the histogram. And if you look in that resource library, you'll be certain to find some things. The other thing that you can do, we do have some classes that we offer via Nikonians. They're set up right now for the D70 body. But frankly, most Nikon DSLRs work very similarly.
There aren't
huge differences whatsoever.
And the basics of digital photography would be well covered as far as the kinds of questions you're asking about.
And we happen to know the person that teaches those, Mike Hagan. We had a chance to meet him down in Florida at PMA. Heck of a nice guy. And I certainly would consider taking one of those, even if it's specific to D70 right now, and that'll change over time. You'll get all the information that you need, and they're held all across the United States. Now, if you're not in the U.S., it's a little bit tougher problem, and there may be equivalent things to that in other countries. I'm not aware of them.
Right.
But I would probably focus more on the internet resources we have in our sites, other places, and start asking questions in the forums, too. You'll find you're in good company. There are a lot of people still in that learning phase when it comes to digital. And frankly, almost all of us are still in that phase. I've been using it for about 3 years, and I'm still learning new things every day.
Now, that's the good news. You can find out where all of our locations are at www.greaterphoto.com. The bad news, Daniel, specifically, is we don't have any workshops in the Atlanta area in 2006. But we'll take your request and pass that on, and maybe in 2007 we'll get Mike to run a workshop in Atlanta.
Yep.
So now the more exciting stuff and the meat and potatoes of this week's show, which is our trip to McAllen, Texas. For those of you who aren't familiar with McAllen, Texas, like me, it's all the way just west of Brownsville. It's the very southern tip of Texas.
It's very far south in Texas.
It's almost
way the heck down there.
If
you're looking at a map, just go all the way down to the bottom, and that's
the pointy part.
Pretty close to where it's at.
That's right. And we flew and spent a few days this past weekend in South Texas. And before we talk about our trip specifically, I want to give a shout out to one of our Nikonians who lived down there, who we had the privilege of meeting for dinner on Thursday night.
Yeah, Ernesto Santos.
Yeah, and Ernesto, it was great to meet you.
Yep, we had a lot of fun doing that.
And for those of you who didn't know, Ernesto won in the digital category in the Nature's Best Photo Awards, which is just unbelievably cool.
Yeah, it's a very prestigious contest, to say the least. And if you look at the work that won there, it's amazingly high quality. So I know Ernesto is proud of that, and justifiably so. His print, which was a panoramic photo taken in the area right around McAllen, is hanging in the Smithsonian as we speak. So
I say,
pretty cool
you
thing.
Can't beat that.
No. Now, a little bit about why we ended up going down to South Texas. We exposed to a couple organizations. They're actually related to each other. There's the Images for Conservation Fund, mm-hmm. and Linz and Land. They're related to each other. Linz and Land is a consortium of private ranch owners that have set up facilities at their ranch specifically for photographers.
In the McAllen, Texas area.
In the McAllen, Texas area. McAllen, Edinburgh area. And in each case, they have photo blinds set up across their ranch, specific locations where you're more likely to see wildlife, meaning birds, smaller sized mammals, up to javelina sized.
Bobcats, if you're
Bobcats, if you're lucky. Deer. We weren't lucky on this trip. But
we weren't that lucky.
Yeah, but we were still lucky.
Peccaries.
Right. And the Images for Conservation Fund is a twist on that. It's a organized photo tour.
It's catering. A nonprofit organization.
Yes, yes.
And it's designed to promote conservation in Texas. And a little bit about ICF is that because most of the land in Texas is privately owned, some 95% nearly of all land in Texas is privately owned, ICF was founded to make an incentive for private landowners to conserve and maintain native habitat on their private land. And one of the ways that, in which they promote that is with the ICF Pro Tour, in which they invite professional photographers to spend an entire, an entire month down in the hill country in Texas and on these private lands, massive shootout with large prize amounts. I think first prize is something around $64,000 if you're invited, kind of like the PGA Tour in golf.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the model for this. And the idea is that then the images from this, from the Pro Tour, will come out, and that will inspire amateurs like ourselves and other Nikonians to go down there and spend some time on these people's property.
Right. But it's a great cause.
Excellent cause.
Preservation of land in its native state. Yeah, it is absolutely a win-win situation.
The landowners get a little bit of a revenue source from photographers.
Right.
We get excellent pictures, and the habitat is preserved without the government or some other organization having to buy and maintain that land.
At any rate, we ended up getting hooked up with this organization, which turned out to be a great thing, as you'll find out soon. We flew down to the airport at McAllen, Texas on Thursday, arrived just after lunchtime.
Yep.
And after getting there, we met up with John and Audrey Martin, who help run both of those organizations. And we headed out to one of their ranches, the Javelina Ranch, and then spent the afternoon shooting in a bird blind. And
it was our first time shooting a bird blind.
Yeah, that was the first time I'd ever done it.
At least in a real
one. First time that you'd done it, yeah. And it was a blast. I got to admit, when I read about blinds in the past, I wasn't too sure about them. It seemed a little bit dull.
Right.
I kind of got the impression to be waiting there for a long time without anything coming by, and it really wasn't the case.
Well, and here's the beauty of these private ranches in South Texas. The way they set up is catering to photographers. So John and Audrey were really nice to invite us down there. They took great care of us. We drove out to – first of all, you can drive to the blind on this property. You don't need a four-wheel drive vehicle. Our little Chevy Malibu Max rental car did fine.
Good awesome old Max. Road car.
And, off-road vehicle. Nice red color to attract in all the whatevers.
Yeah.
But anyway, we drive to the blind. We only had to walk maybe, 50 yards to get to the blind, if that.
Which was fortunate given all the equipment that we were carrying.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. Yeah. You get into the blind, you set up your tripod, and then the ranch owners, most cases, they're going to put out seed, mealworms. This particular ranch had automated feeders that would distribute some seed and corn on the ground every hour or so to just keep the animals coming in. And then here's this wonderful setup. The backgrounds are already – there's perches set up for birds to land on. There's a nice water hole.
And the blind was partially underground.
Yes.
So we had to actually go down into it, look for rattlesnakes first. We learned that tip.
Yes, we learned that.
Started paying attention to that. So you're down near ground level in terms of what you're shooting at. So you get really nice angles on the birds. You're not shooting down at them. You're shooting more at eye level.
That rule of getting low, it's already taken care of most of the time.
Yep. So we camped out in the blind. We had our cooler of Coke and beer sitting right there with
us,
which is important.
And very, very important.
And within just a matter of a few minutes, birds started showing up.
It was
gorgeous ones, actually, too.
Yeah, just there alone, we saw about four or five species, including one of the. Within 5 minutes, we saw one of the species that is native only to that South Texas area, the green jay.
Yeah,
and with all these animals, we slowly will get more posts. We have our 3-picture limit, our upload limit in the wildlife forum, but we've already started putting some of our pictures over there, so you can take a look. At these.
And actually, for this podcast, we'll have some things in our podcast forum that you can look at.
As well as in the show notes
stuff like that. So you can get a sense of what we saw down there.
And the charm of South Texas, Texas in general, is that there's a lot of species down there that you just don't see anywhere else in the United States.
Right.
The green jay is one of them. There's a whole list. We saw the chakalaka.
Mm-hmm.
Boom shakalaka.
Right.
We saw a lot of species that you pretty much would not see anywhere else unless you went to Mexico. These are neotropical migrants or neotropical species where the edge of their range just extends into the Rio Grande Valley there. So that's, you know, in and of itself, that's reason to go to South Texas.
Yeah, because the bird life is just fantastic down there. We got a good indicator of that when we arrived at the airport, in fact, and there were photographs of birds all over the place, information on it. It's a very big thing down there. So at any rate, we started taking photos in there, and I'll tell you, within a few minutes, we were thinking this was just the best thing that we had ever done. It was remarkable.
And we hadn't even started.
Yeah. One thing about shooting on the private ranch is that we talked about a lot while we were down there. Is that a problem with nature photography over the last 10 or 15 years is that it's become incredibly popular. In combination with that, there are a lot of great books out there that talk about shooting locations. Where are the best places to go? Some of the really famous shots, you know, where were they made from? And you can find out all that information. You couple that in with the internet, and there's even more of it. But here's the downside to having all that great information. Everyone else has it too. And if you go to a lot of these famous locations, if you do landscape shooting in the fall at Oxbow Bend and Grand Teton National Park, you'll find, like I did, that there are 40 to 50 other photographers there with you, right at that spot, jammed in with you, taking the same photos. And it's not the same serene and quiet experience that it was 20 or 30 years ago.
Right.
So where can you get that kind of experience, which we certainly had this last weekend? Well, one place is down in South Texas on these private ranches. We were generally the only 2 photographers on a very, very large ranch.
The smallest ranch we were on was 336 acres.
Right.
And some of these other properties, they have, you know,
they're in
thousands of acres.
Yeah.
Maybe some of that is partitioned off. But these landowners have gone through a lot of trouble to work with photographers for feedback on how to improve their blinds, how to improve the backgrounds. If there's something, you know, if there's a branch in the way, they'll move it. They have the feed station set up so that in most cases you don't see the bait that brings in the animals. It's behind a log or a branch strategically placed.
They're watering holes, which work well in a couple ways. Not only are they more likely to attract birds and other animals into them, but you can get nice reflections off of them when the birds or animals come down to drink from the water. They just make a nice part of your subject matter. And, they're set up extremely well.
Another wonderful idea about shooting on private land, although you do have to pay a fee to access this, is the peace of mind aspect. We went to Texas with quite a pretty penny in Nikon acquisition syndrome
scary
materials.
Amount of stuff.
Yeah, and when you're in a national park and if you want to leave something in the car, you got to lock everything up. And even then, you know, there's a lot of people around. On these ranches, you're behind fences. You're behind barbed wire. A lot of times there's locked gates to get in. These are private property. You could leave stuff in the car. It's not a problem.
There are no worries.
No worries at all. And you're far enough in off the beaten path that someone's not going to come wandering through there.
No.
It's just not going to happen. So
it was just incredibly relaxing.
I can't say enough good things about the entire experience, just in general. But back to sort of shooting in a blind.
Yeah.
We got, you know, on Thursday we saw cardinals, male and female. We saw green jays. We saw
Kiskadee,
which is only that's a tropical species, just barely makes it up into Texas. We saw some other birds too. We saw the peccary down there, which has a special name,
a javelina.
It's called a javelina, and it's kind of a pig-looking thing.
Yeah,
and then we're told that, oh, and we saw Mexican ground squirrels there too. That was just the first day,
right?
Plus, you know, a lot of
that was
other
just
birds.
A matter of a few hours only.
Right. I mean, it was not much time.
Yeah,
whatsoever.
A couple hours.
When you're in a blind, one of the tricky things is you can't see around you. You don't know what's coming in. You're sort of you want to prevent other animals from seeing in, which also means that you've got a lot of camouflage netting around. And usually the blinds are closed on three sides. So sometimes you don't necessarily know what's coming. And the other thing you have to be careful about is you can't always use a flash. There's not always enough clearance to rig a flash to shoot out of the blind.
Yeah, it could be a little bit awkward at times.
Some of these blinds were set up where you could do that. Others were not.
Yeah.
And on all these lands, they had blinds set up for the morning, which faced west, so you had the morning sun behind you, and then afternoon blinds, which faced east and would have the afternoon sun behind you. So you would switch in the middle of the day. So that was Thursday, and then after a nice dinner with Ernesto, we woke up bright and early on Friday, and we drove about 45 minutes to the Weaver Ranch, where we met Kent Weaver.
Mm-hmm.
And we pulled up to his property, and first thing he did after welcoming us there was point to a glass terrarium.
And he had one heck of a big rattlesnake in there.
A 6-foot Western Diamondback, yep, to be specific, and a picture of which is posted in the Wildlife Forum. We photographed that snake a little later in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But we went out to his blinds, and we saw a lot of deer.
Mm-hmm.
Again, lots of birds came in. A nice blind.
Yep, set up very well.
And then one particular species that we saw on the Weaver property was the golden-fronted woodpecker, which is a species of woodpecker that only lives in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
You can't see it anywhere else. I had never seen them. Very pretty bird. And there was multiple individuals. After that, we did our rattlesnake shoot.
Yep, which is fun.
And Kent was so kind to handle the rattlesnake for us.
Yeah, we appreciated that.
Kent, thank you. Thank you very much.
Good job.
Because I wouldn't have been anywhere near the darn snake.
No. Actually, you were.
I was 6 feet away.
Yeah, same here. We were just down on the ground with our lenses, you know, mounted on our tripods and shooting away. It worked just fine. No risks. But, yeah, definitely a perspective that you can't get any other way. At least I wouldn't want to normally.
Chances are if I came across a rattlesnake, I wouldn't stick around to photograph it.
Right. But that was fun.
And then that afternoon, we went to a different property, the El Tecolote Ranch, where we met Bob Simpson. And mm-hmm. we took a tour of his property. And they've got a lot of nice stuff set up. And, again, we spent the afternoon in a blind on their property.
Mm-hmm.
One thing about South Texas is normally this time of year it's very green. There's a lot of rain, but this particular year they're in a hellacious drought.
Right.
It's been really, really tough on them, and so depending on whether or not things have been irrigated, there's less vegetation. Mm-hmm. But normally, what you can do is you don't have to spend time in the blind. You can get out of the blind. You can do macro work. You can do flowers, butterflies, other insects. Some of these properties have a lot of dragonflies on them,
right.
Frogs, other amphibians, just a ton of stuff, and that you don't necessarily have to be in the blind to do.
Mm-hmm. And there we saw some of the same types of birds, plus also some wild turkeys.
Yeah, wild turkeys were on the property.
Yeah, yep, and that was fun. And then the next day, we met up with Steve Benson.
Who's a photographer on the side. He's a veterinarian.
Right.
And Steve is one of the people who actually set up the lensandland.com website mm-hmm. for this association.
Yeah, and Steve's got a great setup, I thought. He's got an area that is near where he lives on the property that I just thought was incredibly cool. It's kind of like an outdoor, how would you describe it?
Kind of a hacienda type of thing.
Or yeah, I don't know what to describe it.
Yeah, it was a roof. He had a refrigerator. He had a full bar.
Yeah, which we liked.
And places to sit, power outlets. So if you had your laptop, you needed to charge up in the middle of the day or download pictures, you could do all of that. He had a real toilet with running water,
mm-hmm.
Which is really nice. Beats an outhouse any time of day. Just real hospitable.
Exactly.
Incredibly friendly atmosphere to go and be comfortable in. You park your car there, and then you drive to your blind. And he had 3 morning blinds, I believe, and 3 afternoon blinds.
Yeah, set up just wonderfully, too.
Unbelievable. The cleanest blinds I've ever been in. They had AstroTurf on the the floor. Plenty of headroom if you needed to get into there and use your flash. I had my SB800 on a flash bracket with no trouble at all.
Yep.
We're using
Phil
Flash.
We both did.
Yeah. Some of these blinds were large enough to fit 4 people in.
Yeah. So we were very comfortable.
It was
comfortable,
great.
Needless to say.
Plenty of room for the cooler of beer.
That was important.
Yes. And in the morning, we saw some wonderful species, including painted buntings, which are incredibly colorful birds.
Oh, they're amazing.
We saw Pyrrhalexia.
Like little rainbows, pretty much.
Yeah. We saw curved-bill thrashers. Mm-hmm. We saw another species of thrasher, which is escaping me at the moment, the ubiquitous green jays.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve caught a scorpion in the morning when we were arriving.
Right.
He said, I'll put it in a jar. When you come back, we'll do some macro work on the scorpion.
And we did.
And we did. And there's a picture of that scorpion in the macro forum on
the web. So that was fun.
And of course, I say I'm taking these pictures, but quite honestly, Rick has the same pictures too. It could have been taken by
either
of us.
Yeah, don't compare them. It's kind of scary almost.
It's frightening, some of these shots. Yeah, we got the same. And then we had the treat of all treats in the afternoon.
Yeah, this is the highlight of the trip for sure.
Hands down.
Yeah. We went over to his raptor blind.
Yeah, Steve set up a two-person blind. They're actually 2 individual blinds.
Mm-hmm.
They're not dug into the ground.
Right.
About 10 feet in front of, or 10 or 12 feet in front of, there's a small watering hole and perch for smaller birds to come in. And then about 30 feet out, there's a large perch for raptors with some vegetation around it.
Right.
And
rocks.
Then about, I don't know, maybe...
About
50 or 100 feet away is some larger trees.
Right.
And what he did was he baited those 2 larger perches with beef kidney.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't roadkill, photofill style, but it still worked.
It did work.
And it worked quite well
within
about a half an hour.
Yeah, we were sitting there.
Yeah, we were sitting there for a half an hour wondering what was going on. And then...
wonder if anything's going to show. We were starting to worry just a little.
And then it
and
was
then
like...
the show began.
The show came out, and the first thing we saw was a Harris's hawk. Harris hawk is another species that you won't see in the continental United States unless you go to Texas. Beautiful, dark brown, almost
golden
brown, like mahogany kind of color. With a white tail, beautiful animal, and there it was.
Yeah, it just came swooping down. It's like, oh, boy.
Yeah, I remember Rick said, hey, and I said, look, and then the next, I kind of didn't breathe for a few seconds.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
Yeah, because they were so close.
And then about 10 minutes later, we were graced by the presence of a pair of crested caracaras.
Mm-hmm.
And they're another subtropical species. They do get into the United States in a few places, but Texas is one of the main spots you might see them.
Right.
And these birds are in the falcon family.
They're beautiful birds.
They're just incredible. They're majestic. They look, they really have a sense of
you can tell they're intelligent.
Yeah.
It's obvious.
And they're big. They're probably about 2 feet tall when they're walking.
Mm-hmm. It was a bit like if you saw Jurassic Park, the
kinda
Velociraptors.
Like kind of like that.
That's about what it was like.
Thank
with them
goodness
going
they
around.
Didn't see us. And the first one came in over from behind. Again, remember I was saying in the blind, you don't have the greatest peripheral vision. This thing swoops down and landed 15 feet in front of us. No kidding. And there we were. And it started walking to that first perch. And the continuous advance began.
It did.
And I think we shot about 4 gigs each of memory card.
At least.
In
I
that
think.
One setting.
At least.
And we watched the caracaras then for probably a good 45 minutes to an hour.
Mm-hmm.
We got some flight shots. Focus tracking was happening. And it was excellent. I mean, just excellent.
Yeah. Actually, why don't we take just a minute and talk a little bit about camera settings.
What we used.
Yeah, because I think more so than most of the blinds that we're in, that's where it really mattered.
Yeah, it did.
Because the birds there, those large raptors, were moving around so much, and we were doing a combination.
Well, this whole trip, I'll tell you, I was thankful to be shooting digital because I was trying different things, different times, looking at the results, saying, "Gosh, I got to make this better. Maybe it's not sharp." So let's just start with the equipment that we brought.
Yeah,
we each had our D2X.
We're not twins.
We each had a 70 to 200 VR.
Right.
We each had a 17 to 55 mm-hmm. DX. No, we're not twins.
No, no.
And we brought the 17 to 55 mostly so that we could document where we were.
Didn't use it too much.
You
really
wouldn't have needed that on this trip at all. Rick brought a 180 macro, or no, the 200 AF mm-hmm. F4 macro. I brought some extension tubes in my 500D diopter mm-hmm. for my 70 to 200. And then we each had a long lens.
Yep, a 200 to 400 VR.
And the TC14.
E, yep.
E. And Rick, you also had a TC20E, right?
Right.
For some times. But this was my first time really using my brand new 200 to 400 VR.
Yeah.
And your second time, right?
Yeah, I'd used it down in Florida. It worked well, but this was...
And I think what we're going to do is we've been so happy with that lens that we'll probably talk about it in an upcoming episode. We'll do a mini review of that.
Yeah, because we're definitely collecting our thoughts on it. Very positive, by the way.
Now, so back to the Raptor blind. We were both set up with the Gitzo tripod, mm-hmm. carbon fiber. I use a 1325.
Yep, and I had the slightly bigger 1548. Both work fine.
Ball head.
Yep.
I use the Kirk BH1. I think you do too.
Yeah.
But any ball head would have worked, the Markins or the Really Right stuff, mm-hmm. and those have been fine. And then we used the Wimberly Sidekick.
Important
that
thing
sort of
right there.
Portable gimbal head, which we talked about in a couple of episodes before. It allows you to really just balance the whole lens assembly and move it in any direction.
Yeah, you can have it so it just, you know, just tiny adjustments with your hand, you know, move the lens. It's just perfectly balanced.
You don't have to worry about tension adjustments and balancing things. And
you don't have to worry about it flopping over if you've left it loose, which you really want to do in order to be able to move around quickly. You cannot easily lock your tripod into place and get shots. There just isn't a whole lot of time.
Now, as far as camera settings, we did use VR on.
We pretty much kept VR on.
I tried it both
ways,
and I couldn't tell a difference, so I just used it on.
Yeah. Where I found it really helped was, you know, with the sidekicks being left loose so you could move around a lot. If you were shooting at a slower ISO, and for the most part I used 200, I used 100 at times, and at other times 400, but I was mostly in the 200 realm. I could shoot at shutter speeds that, you know, weren't all that high, you know, maybe a 200th of a second, and get very sharp shots. I mean, perfectly sharp. So the VR feature worked great. If you're wondering whether or not VR is useful on a longer lens, absolutely. And it's because of things like shooting on a sidekick.
Right. It's just a little bit of jiggle that I could see go away when the VR would activate.
It definitely helped.
Now, that being said, fast shutter speeds are still a necessity because it's not the camera shake you're worried about. It's the motion blur from the animal. And birds, especially little ones,
they like to twitch.
They move really fast. It is tough. So I found myself shooting a lot in shutter priority and dialing in a shutter speed of a 400th of a second or faster. Mm-hmm. In the case of trying to get flight shots, I was dialing in 1/1000th or even 1/1250th of a second.
Right.
And then the other thing that I did was I set my D2X to use auto ISO. And so what it would do, it would vary the ISO, always trying to keep it as low as possible.
Yeah,
and
I
usually
haven't really
kept it low. But
yeah, I've never used that feature. What I should have done is experimented a little bit before the trip and tried it out to get used to it.
Where that works is with shutter priority or manual exposure mode.
Mm-hmm. And I don't use shutter priority normally, but it's something I've got to do a little bit of research on and try at home. I thought about trying it on the trip, and I thought, nah, it's not time to try something new.
Right. Well, what I find with shutter priority in the past was it was challenging to use if the light situation was changing, when the sun is going in and out of clouds. If you know the light situation is good, you can set an ISO value. It'll pick an aperture. But what happens if the light gets a little bit too low, or your subject goes into a dark area, like not up against the blue sky or something, where it's not illuminated as well? All of a sudden, you don't have enough light, and you're underexposing.
Right.
By setting ISO to auto and I believe the D200 does this too.
Mm-hmm.
I know the D2s do it. What you do is you dial in the lowest ISO that you want. It tries to keep it there. When it starts underexposing at maximum aperture, then it will compensate by kicking the ISO up a notch. And it'll do this with the D2X at 1/3 EV increments. So a lot of times I was shooting at ISO 160 or 125 or maybe 200, but most of the time that was enough to get wonderfully sharp images.
Yeah. Now some of the other settings, we kept our cameras set to continuous advanced
continuous
mode.
Continuous high frame mm-hmm. rate mode.
Yeah, because stuff can happen very, very quickly and you want the camera to be responsive.
And continuous servo autofocus.
Right. And I predominantly use the dynamic mode.
Single area dynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I use that as well. The only time I changed was we had a few situations with the Caracaras where you could tell that they were lining up to fly off the perch. In that case, I switched to group area dynamic and tried to lock onto the bird and track it. And I got some fairly good flight shots. I'm still learning at this. It's very challenging.
Yeah. One of the things that you definitely want to do is if your camera has different sensor areas in the viewfinder, and certainly the D2 cameras, the D200, D100, D70, D50, all of those cameras do, use those other sensors. Use the little
right.
thumb pad on the back to move them around. You want always with these photos to get the eyes in sharp focus, ideally
and
the one
hard.
Closest to you. It's very hard. You'll get some images where you haven't done it. That's just normal. And that's why you want to take a fair number of images.
And birds is probably the hardest.
Yeah. What happens in general is that the autofocus system will lock onto the body, feathers on the body, and the eyes will just be a little bit out of focus. They'll be just a little bit further
right.
back.
And shooting at a higher f-stop, f-number isn't going to help
you
here.
No, you don't want to do
and
it.
You don't want to do that.
Because then the shutter speed will
right.
get longer, so you might have motion blur. Plus the background will get in sharper focus, and it becomes distracting.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to do instead is switch to another sensor in the frame, try to line it up with the eyes. And you can usually do that pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely take advantage of that feature.
Absolutely. And what I found myself doing with having the luxury of the 200 to 400 VR, and we used it with and without a teleconverter. And for the flying birds, I took the teleconverter off. And in fact, I zoomed out. I wasn't zoomed in all the way to 400 millimeter focal length because you need that area to be able to see where the animal is in the viewfinder. The hardest thing about using long lenses is that the angle of view is so narrow.
Right.
That you don't know, it's very hard to track anything.
Yeah. And
so zooming out helped.
Yeah. And especially when you have a new subject and you're trying to acquire it in your viewfinder, the area that you're picking up is so narrow that sometimes you just can't find it. And you're, moving your camera and lens all around and just not spotting it. So being able to zoom out and have a little bit wider area was very helpful. In addition to situations where the subject moved closer to you, could zoom out. The zoom feature was great.
Right.
Very, very useful. Now, we're talking about some pretty expensive lenses.
Yeah, I was just going to say, most of you out there probably don't have a 200 to 400 VR. That's a $5,000
lens. Yeah, we're lucky
lens.
To have them, quite honestly. Now,
we're lucky to have wives that let us have
yes,
them.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Let's be very clear on this.
Oh, yeah. Now, can you do this with cheaper equipment? Absolutely.
Darn right you could.
Yeah.
In fact, I commented several times during the trip how I was looking at my EXIF data, and I wasn't always shooting at the maximum.
No. Don't get us wrong. It was great to have those. I think our percentage of keepers was a lot higher than it would have been with other things. But a good setup, if you wanted to photograph down there, and of course we highly recommend it, would be a digital body. The crop factor is your friend, absolutely, with this kind of photography. There's no doubt. In fact, most of the Canon photographers that we know doing this subject, these kind of subjects, will use bodies with crop factors just for that reason.
And they're still using a 600 f4.
Yeah. Now, what you can get by with just fine is a nice 300 f4 autofocus lens, something like that.
And a
with
TC.
With a 1.4 teleconverter will work well for
most
subjects.
I think that
would
work really good.
You might have to crop your images just a little bit, but that's okay. You'll get good shots.
The 80 to 400 would be fine?
Yeah, it would be fine. It's just not super fast focusing.
Right.
But for a lot of the subjects that we were shooting,
they hold still
that was
long
okay.
enough to,
yeah, they right. really do.
You might have had a challenging time with focusing on flying birds or.
Yeah, I think if you just devote a little bit of time before the shoot, getting prepared and doing some dry runs with your equipment right. so you know it really well, it would pay off and you'd get very fine images. So please don't hold off going down there just because you don't have the super deluxe right. long lenses.
I think you could even get away with, it would be tough, but with some of the blinds, you could probably get away with something like a 7200 or 8200 with the TC17. It would be pushing it in terms of focal length.
Yeah, some of the smaller birds would be tough.
The smaller birds would be tough, but the larger birds would be fine, and if you get the deer or other mammals, you'd be fine. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that, you know, there are a lot of opportunities for macro down there and for subjects, flowers, and things that you don't have to be in the blind, like we were saying.
Right.
So just keep that in mind. You know, if you have a macro lens or a way of bringing, you know, extension, pack that with you when you go, because there'll be some opportunities yeah. you'd have to do that.
One thing that we haven't talked a lot about yet are the flash systems that we used. You right. mentioned it briefly.
Yes.
But both of us were using SB800 Nikon flashes. Mm-hmm. We had those on flash brackets. I had a really Wright Stuff one, and you had a Wimberly, right?
Right.
Same basic thing, and there are other ones out there, too.
The idea of the flash bracket is when you're on a with a big lens, you mount the lens to the tripod, to the ball head, or in this case, the sidekick, mm-hmm. on the foot of the lens. So when you rotate the lens, when you rotate to the portrait orientation, you turn the camera. The lens
flash doesn't rotate also.
And with the flash bracket, the flash will not rotate.
Yeah, so it stays in the right orientation, which is, you know, above
the
lens. Coming down to your subject, which looks a little bit more natural. Also gets a little bit more vertical
right.
separation between your lens axis and the flash. So if you had a subject where the light might reflect mm-hmm. off their eyes, you avoid that problem. We didn't have that in any of our photos.
No.
And the most important thing
yep.
is we had better beamers mm-hmm. Attached to our flash. This is a little simple device.
We're not twins.
This is pathetic. Same stuff.
Well,
we were even dressed the same. We both had camouflage clothes on. We looked like a bunch.
We even bought our camouflage pants at the same
we looked
Army
like
Navy store
men or something like that.
Well, we were Nikonians.
Yeah, but we looked cool. But the better beamers, just this.
We were much too sexy for our own good.
Well, yeah, Remod. So the better beamer has this Fresnel lens that goes out in front of your flash, and a couple little plastic simple brackets and a rubber band thing that attaches it to your flash.
No, the new ones have Velcro.
Okay, yeah, Velcro. Mine's an older one. And what it does is it concentrates the light from the flash into a narrower zone that works very well with a longer lens. So because it's concentrating it, you can get further reach.
Yep.
Longer distances, which is exactly what you want. Now, why would you use flash with birds? Well,
two reasons.
Okay.
One, the obvious reason is fill flash, because mm-hmm. a lot of times these birds, you know, depending on where the light is, a good photograph always has a catch light in the
right.
eye of the animal. And by using flash with some fill flash,
you get
the catch light, guaranteed. And then to do that, you set your camera, set the flash to balanced fill flash mode. Mm-hmm. And most times we found ourselves dialing in about minus 1 2/3 or more of exposure compensation on the SB800 itself.
Yeah. I ended up liking -2 about the best.
Yeah, -2 seems.
Yeah, it looked a little bit
depends
more
on
natural.
The light. If you got side lighting, you know, that you might dial in a little bit more. If it's
right.
back lighting, you're going to dial in a lot more. Mm-hmm. And if the subject is fully front lit, you might not need much at all.
Right.
Now, if the subject goes into a shadowed area, you might crank up the flash and use it in standard flash mode, where the flash becomes the major source of light.
Right.
Instead of the sun. And that helps to freeze the action.
Yeah, the flash also brought out just a little bit more color.
Yeah, a little
in
more
the
detail.
Feathers. And so you definitely want to use it.
Not 100% necessary, but when you can use it, it does add a nice touch.
Yeah, it does. Any other things? I think that's about it.
I mean, that's kind of, we could sit here and talk for about a half an hour.
Yeah,
on,
lots of
on
flash
why
cards.
Why are we really... Yeah. I shot 3 gigabytes of images total.
Mm-hmm. I didn't count mine up yet, but it was a lot.
Something like
not
that.
Not quite as much, I think, but it was a lot.
And, you know, I found my, I mean, I just, the only thing I would say if you're into shooting little birds, you know, a camera body with a better autofocus mechanism, the D2s or the D200s, will be your friend because it has more sensors and a better output. But could you go down there with a D70 or a D50 and shoot these shots? Absolutely.
Yeah.
No reason why you couldn't. You just have a little slower frame rate, and you'd have to be a little bit more careful about your composition with the autofocus brackets, but that's about it.
Yeah. You'd get shots that you were very proud of, I think. The circumstances, the way the blinds are set up and everything makes it so much easier than in other places.
So after our wonderful Saturday at Steve Benson's property, thank you, Steve, for just a great time. Sunday morning, we did our final shoot near the town of Edinburgh, Texas, at the Martin property, their homestead there, their house. And we saw a cool bird called the Chachalaca. Chachalaca.
Yeah, they're, I'm sure we're saying it wrong.
They are only found in a very narrow strip of southeast Texas. It's the only species of this entire family that lives in the United States, and that's the only place you can see it. They're pretty cool looking.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, they kind of look like Galliform birds, like there's some sort of like, you know, chicken or something, but they're not. They're a totally different family.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. And I shot them with my 70-200 VR with and without the tripod.
Yeah, me too.
Got close enough to them. Most of the time, these are birds that are heard but not seen. They're very loud, but they don't come out and show themselves. Well, they have some very, very friendly ones on their property that know where the feeder is, and you can get great shots of this otherwise elusive species. And then we spent about 2 hours in the blind.
Right.
We did shoot some cactus flowers, which were cool. And then we shot in the blind, and it was great. Again, just a wonderful background. We saw hummingbirds there.
Mm-hmm.
We saw some scaled quail, which is another neat species.
Yep.
Can't say enough good things about the hospitality that we had from every one of these landowners.
Yeah, and
down the line.
And we've both photographed in some great places.
How many people do you know would capture and handle a rattlesnake for you? I mean, come on. I mean, that's
just plain thoughtful.
That's just darn nice. I mean,
yeah, but we've photographed in some great places, the Everglades, you know, Merritt Island area.
And those are good places, but it's so much more hit and miss.
Yeah, it really is. I'll tell you, this was a more productive shooting location.
If you want to come away and spend 2 or 3 days, or even 2 days at a place and come away with a ton of frame-filling shots of unique species, and you know, there's no such thing in nature as a guarantee. But this is about as close to a guarantee for good shooting and seeing these animals as you can get.
Yeah.
You know, you can go to a national park and it can be everything perfect and you won't see anything. You won't be able to get close to the animals necessarily, especially the birds.
Yeah. Now, some last logistical type things. Mm-hmm. We'll put this information in our podcast form too, so you don't have to write this all down right now. It'll be there. For information on those private ranches, just go to Lens and Land. There are no spaces or hyphens. .com, and it'll have information on the ranches, what's there, contact info, all of that kind of stuff. So you can check that out. We'll also have the website for Images for Conservation Fund.
I think it's imagesforconservation.org.
Okay, thank you.
But
yeah. And
because there's other private ranches in other parts of Texas that are doing this as well.
Exactly, in the hill country and things like that. In terms of airports that you want to fly into, if you are flying into it, the McAllen Airport is great. Very nice airport. Very easy to get in and out of.
And at least two major U.S. airlines fly there. I think American and Continental both go there.
Plenty of stuff around McAllen and Edinburgh in terms of places to stay. We stayed in Edinburgh, which is a little bit smaller area.
Right.
Plenty of stuff there, though, and lots of restaurants to eat at night and during the day if you have a break in the middle of the day. No problems there. It's very inexpensive to stay down there, which is a big thing. We were only paying, what, $45?
Yeah, it came out to be about $50 a night.
With all the tax and stuff, but $50 a night is
Are you kidding me?
Incredible.
And they were large rooms. You know,
it was nice. Yeah, and there were a bunch of places to stay there. The rental car was inexpensive compared to a lot of locations, so it's a very good deal when you compare the images that you'll come back with the cost. So, highly recommended.
I mean, you could spend the same amount on airfare and lodging anywhere.
Yeah.
and not get any good pictures.
Yeah.
And the fee for shooting on these properties, I think, is about $125 per person per day. Mm-hmm. Which, when you think about it, for all the shots you're going to get, that's nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you, it's a lot better to forego the purchase of a piece of equipment and do something like this if you really care about photography.
You'll get more. You'll get more pictures.
Yeah, absolutely.
So hopefully we'll get to go down there again, right?
Yep.
That's an idea.
Yeah, one of the things that we are considering is doing a private tour down there that we would run next year.
Take some people down there.
Yep.
A small group.
Small group, not too large. If anyone is interested in doing that, let us know. You know, still in the
we're in the very formative stages.
Yeah.
Send us an email to talkradio@nikonians.org. Send us an email anyway. We need more questions. We want to hear from you. We appreciate all the feedback and in general. But if you're interested in taking a trip with the Image Doctors, possibly in spring of 2007, let us know.
Yep.
We'd like to gauge that.
And I think that's probably it for this week's topics. Next week, we'll get back to a little bit more of the RAW converters.
Right.
And possibly a 200 to 400 review.
That's right.
Yep.
And who knows what else we'll dredge up. We'd like to answer your questions, so don't forget to send us an email.
Yep. And as always, thanks for listening.
Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.